Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Yes, it's 3GT time, and we're glad you're here. This is Barry York, president of Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'm joined today with my good friend and co-host, Scott Hunt, a prosecuting attorney, parishioner, all-around good guy from Marion, Indiana. Scott, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing, Barry?
I am well. We were both, before we got on the air, talking about cleaning out our basements, and there's nothing that just feels better than getting a lot of things cleared out. I took a whole truckload of stuff to Goodwill today, so I'm a happy man.
Yeah, you know, it does stir up a lot of memories. I don't know if you're like me, but when you're cleaning stuff out, you pick up an old toy, and I remember when kids play with this, and you look at a picture and I can't believe how old I've gotten or the kids have gotten, how much they've grown. It's kind of a bittersweet thing. It's nice to get the junk out and it refreshes and stirs up great memories.
Yeah, you're making me feel guilty because the last box I put on the pile at the Goodwill is the teddy bear that Miriam had as a child. And we talked about maybe keeping it, and then we just decided, you know, it's gonna go someday. But it's like, put that teddy bear there. I have to admit, I got a little weepy and I almost picked it up. I was going to stick it in the glove box or something. I said, no, we can't do that. If I start doing it with the teddy bear, it'll be other things before it's all done. So call me heartless and cruel, but I did get teary eyed.
I will do my best Kyle impersonation and say, grow up. It's just a teddy bear.
That's right.
That was my Kyle impersonation for the day.
Pretty good. Well, speaking of Kyle, you listeners will know that he's still not on the air with us. We do hope, and it might be a couple of months or so. We're just not quite sure as he works on something related to the church. But we hope that before too long, he'll be back and joined together with us. And we do have, although it's just Scott and myself today, we do have plans to bring others on, have some other people I'm interacting with, and we'll be announcing as we unveil future episodes some of our guests, and that's always fun to have someone else on. But I enjoy the time that I get with you, Scott, and that you and I have, you know, more time to talk and interact when Kyle's not around.
Have you noticed the level of dialogue has, you know, improved significantly when we don't have Kyle here busting our chops all the time? I'm sorry, we're just making jokes at Kyle's expense. Sorry,
buddy. Yes, that's right. He probably doesn't even listen either. So, well, one of the things we're going to talk about, or the thing actually we're going to talk about today, is church planting. Both of us have been involved in church planting together. And I thought, I teach it at RPTS, and I'm actually involved in something currently. And I just thought there might be some help given to those who listen to us to just hear a little bit of our experience together as church planting. And then particularly, I'd like to talk with you, Scott, about different models of church planting. I think often that when it comes to certain subjects in the church, certain ministries that we do, we can think there's only one approach. And I think that can be the case with respect to church planting. And so we'd like to talk about some different models that can be used and our experiences in that. So that's our subject for today. Hopefully that didn't result in everybody turning us off, hitting the pause or stop button, but they'll continue to listen along with us. But Scott, let's talk a little bit just about our experience together. I was church planting in Kokomo, Indiana, back in the early 90s. And at one point along the way, a group of students from IWU started showing up at our service, and that's when I got to first know you. What year was that? It was before we got our buildings.
Yeah, so when when the first, I remember very distinctly the first time I worshiped at Sycamore. We were at the YWCA still there on Sycamore. And I think it was October of 1996 was the first time I visited. And as I recall, there were four of us who came and visited that day. And I know one of those gentlemen is now a pastor in the PCA church. But that was the first time we came. And then, you know, we were hit and miss for a while. But I...
You're a college student.
That's called quite regularly if it's hit and miss if you're a college student. No, and then in 1997, the following year, is when I really... I started coming faithfully weekly, my girlfriend and then my fiance, and then my wife, all the same person, Allison, she and I started attending church and we joined the church in, I believe it was 1998 is when we joined. It's funny. I remember going through the membership class with, Jacob Fisher. Jacob was, I think, 14 at the time. He's a deacon now in our church. I'm not sure if you knew that.
I did know that, but that's encouraging.
You know, I just remember he looked so, you know, I've told him this, you know, he was probably shaving more then than I do now. I mean, the guy just has a wonderful beard. it's just neat to be able to look back and see how, you know, the Lord has built his church like that, but yes, sorry, I'm digressing. But so it was 1996, 1997 when, we started coming quite regularly.
And of course, for any that know us, we were a daughter, what we would call a daughtering work from the Lafayette Church, which was about an hour drive west of Kokomo. And then you were coming from the other direction, from the east, from Marion. And were involved with us.
Yep.
Those were exciting days. We were also at that point in time helping with a church up in the Elkhart area, about 2 hours north of us, that was developing up there. And during those years, I know it started around 1995 or so. Once a month, we were going up with a group actually from Kokomo to help support that work, holding a service in a home there. I would preach and teach, and we began to see a work develop there that was different than the kind of church plant that we had in Kokomo. And then, of course, you're no longer really a church plant per se, because you're a fully organized congregation now in Marion. But the Marion work arose out of Kokomo. And just explain a little bit of that process and how that occurred, Scott.
Well, it occurred because of the love and the faithfulness of pastors and elders in Kokomo and investing their time in the students in Marion. And also in Marion was another a dear family to us, Joe and Kathy Marsis, and opening their home. So we would have Bible studies on Sunday evenings. I remember it well because we got great snacks and great times of fellowship, both of which college students love. Snacks and fellowship. And then after a while, we started getting older, and three of the couples and that were there got married and stuck around Marion. So you had four real families in Marion who were all at this time then traveling over to Kokomo weekly for worship and then Bible studies. So we had there was a nice core group of believers there in Marion. And so it took a long time. I mean, the Bible study started back in 1998, the winter of 98, if I'm not mistaken, at the Marsis home. And so we just continued to meet. And Barry, you made yourself available I remember our morning, our breakfast prayer times that we had. Good time for growth there. And so it happened very organically. It was almost like it wasn't planned, but it just sprouted. You kind of a rogue plant is what you'd call it. You didn't really plan it. It just kind of came up, and what do you do with it? Yes. But So over the years, we maintained Bible studies in Marion, and then back in 2014, we started having worship services on Sundays in Marion in the morning. And then 2015, we organized. And while we are still, we're an organized church, not a church plant anymore, in a lot of ways, we're still young and growing. And so that's kind of how it I hope that's the question you were asking, but that's how it developed.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to hear that history. Those times in Joe and Kathy's home, having those vigorous Bible studies around the table were always special. And of course, I reaped a sweet daughter-in-law out of that household with
yes,
Abby marrying my son, Trevor. But we also saw the Lord bring a church planter to us, and the person of your current pastor, Jason Camry, yes. God brought him in a mysterious way to us. And we started realizing.
I don't know if.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if many people know the story, but about our pastor, Jason. He was a police officer in Marion, it goes back farther than that, but he was a police officer in Marion in the early and mid-90s, and actually decided to leave the police force and become a Baptist preacher, and then started reading Reformed theology, and he showed up at our church in Kokomo. I think he was living at Peru at the time, but showed up at our church, and I think it was the day Ian was baptized, maybe, or right after Ian was born. Ian's my oldest, and had a heart for ministry, and he labored there and went to seminary and became a pastor and was called to back to Kokomo with the intent of being a church planter in Marion. And he has family in Marion through his wife. And knows many people in Marion from his days as a police officer. So the Lord really raised Jason up and developed him even before he was probably a Christian, I think would be his testimony, but certainly afterward while he was in Marion to be a church planter in Marion. And it's been a wonderful experience and a wonderful blessing to our congregation.
Yes. And when I teach church planting at the seminary, I do share some of the experience because in many ways, as I came to faith in college, moved into the network of churches in Indiana, it just became part of the DNA that you would, that church planting should be taking place, and that you wouldn't only try to establish your own congregation, but see others raised up through you and pray and labor that way. So it was just a wondrous blessing to be involved in that. And I think back in my early days when I was actually wrestling with my own internal call, my pastor at the time, Dave Long, had me do an extensive study through the book of Acts. And as I looked at the pattern that's there, the book of Acts is easily outlined by its theme verse of chapter 1, verse 8, but you shall be my witnesses when the Spirit has come upon you in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and even to the ends of the earth. And you just see that development there in Jerusalem and then the surrounding countryside. And then by Acts 13, this whole missionary movement that sends Paul and others out through the Roman Empire, planting congregations. And that's really to be the cycle, the pattern of church life, is that we should be growing and being involved in church planting. To be honest, when I moved out here to Pennsylvania and was trying to figure out where to live and what congregation to be involved in, part of the reason that we located at the College Hill congregation is that there was an openness in the pastor, my pastor, Titus Martin, some that I had spoken of there to church planting, and we weren't quite sure how it would develop. And by God's grace, last year we saw a whole other group just a few blocks away begin another ministry, and it wasn't easy work. It was very difficult work, but it's been fascinating to watch the Lord bless that and multiply both groups. They're both growing, and there's a great deal of stability and students coming from the campus and everything. So that's been fun to see. And then just recently, we've been exploring a further outreach here near where I live, about 15 minutes away from from College Hill congregation down in the Beaver area. And so I'm thankful to be involved, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Lord does and seeing how it can involve other students. And I'm pretty excited. And one of the guys helping in some of this, and we don't know quite how much he'll be involved, is actually one of your good friends and one of the ones that God raised up, one of those early couples you talked about out of the Marian ministry, Jason Thoman, who just was recently sustained in his eligibility to receive a call exams. And so we hope to see him called here before too long. And how he'll fit into all this, we're not sure yet, but we just want to share, as we start this discussion, share that this isn't just theoretical to us. This is where we're living as those have been involved in church planting. And so I want to move over to talking about some of the different models. But before we do that, Scott, is there anything you want to add to just that overview of what we've been doing?
No, I just wanted to add a quick aside about Jason Thoman. A little birdie has told me that he may be one of the reasons I'm on this podcast. I don't know if there's any truth to that.
That's right. When we were out and searching for another parishioner, I still remember where I was. I was walking in the hallway upstairs, and Jason and I were having a conversation. I mentioned we were looking for someone, and he says, "Have you thought about Scott Hunt?" And I was like, the bells went on at that point in time. I go, "That's perfect." And so we're glad you're on here. So you can thank Jason. Well, or blame him. I don't know which one you want to do.
Thank or blame, or a little bit of both. You know, it's so it's just amazing how the Lord works, right?
But that's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about models for church planting, because I think this could be helpful to our listeners. As we said earlier, at times we can think there's just only one way to do church planting, and that's just not the case. There are different models, and we want to talk about at least six different models of church planting today in the remaining time that we have. And Scott, probably the one that's most common, that most of our listeners would be familiar with, I'm going to try to trip you up and see if you can get this, but I'm going to call it colonizing. But that would be more of what we've done probably in Indiana than other things. So what do you think colonizing is?
Well, I'm going to assume it doesn't have the negative connotation that colonizing has in popular culture these days, colonization. But
hey, what does that mean? I'm not a cultural guy. What does that mean?
Well, you think of the British Empire going somewhere and setting up shop and kind of taking over.
I see. I think you're talking about some kind of hip thing that I'm just not up on.
No, not this time. It's sort of, I think, where you have a location nearby that you want to see a church plant started. And so you start sending people to that city or to that area, having Bible studies, opening homes, doing that, gaining interest. And then ultimately, when you have enough, interest there and core groups in this new location, then you establish a mission church and go from there. So it's organic in the way that it grows. But there's a lot of a mother-daughter type of relationship to that church. So my show notes suggest that colonizing is like daughtering a church.
That's right.
Where you're involved in it, but it's a separate church from the beginning. It has its own leadership once it's organized, and but I think that's what colonizing would be.
Yes, very much so. I think in our circles we often call it daughtering a work, and it is sending off a subgroup of your people, maybe some others that have shown interest in the area, and seeing these core families, core households develop. And when it gets to sufficient strength, that you organize it. And often during that mission church phase, what really what you're really looking for is for to see leadership, local leadership raised up, because you have borrowed leadership for a time. It can be the, it could be an overseeing session. So for a good part of the time in Lafayette, their session was a temporary governing body over the work in Kokomo. And the same type of thing happened from Kokomo to Marion. And you wait until that group has enough strength and particularly leadership. And then you organize it with its own local elders. You call it a pastor, and that work becomes organized. So that would be colonizing. And I would say that's more what we're familiar with in our circles than perhaps other types of church planting. But I think it is important to realize that there are other models.
Yeah. Yes, Scott. And that's been both of our experiences, right? With both Lafayette, Kokomo, Marion. I mean, that's been largely, at least for most of your ministry, probably until recently, but that's been the common way that churches have grown. Now, certainly there is other ways, five other ways probably.
That's right. And another way we might call adopting. And in some ways, the work up in Elkhart was like that. So what do you think adopting is? But I'm playing professional today. Like, you get to sit in my class, sure. Scott, get quizzed.
So in law school, what they do is they would call your name and have you stand up and then okay. just pepper you with that questions. Way. No, that's okay. I don't miss those days at all. I would assume adopting and where a group of people or even another whole church desires to come into the denomination and is looking to do that. And so members and preachers from our denomination would go and help them, teach them, train them in our ways. So it's like a full church there already, but they have to learn a whole new, a whole new set of polity, rules, governing, worship, all of. So it's like the name suggests, you know, when a child is not born to its mother and father, that when they adopt, they become part of that family and they are engrafted in and as are as real and as much a part of that family as a natural born child or a daughter, as it were. But that's the right. way that they're brought in is very different in that they were born, they grew apart from this, but now they're brought in. And so it's no less glorious. It's no less wonderful to see this. It's just a different process. So right. it's when the church comes to the denomination and asks to be brought in, and the denomination then does that through training and seeing the leadership and evaluating the leadership.
That's right. That's right. And just like an adoption, you can have a child that's a newborn versus someone who's older, 8, 10, 12, mm-hmm. whatever. You can get an adoption at various stages. So in Elkhart, we had several families who had connections with the RP Church, but they were at that point in time, had their membership in other places, but were gathering together for Bible study and fellowship, and then began to ask our presbytery to help them develop a work there. And so we adopted that. We said, yes, we went up there and explored it. A few of us went up there and explored it. And we said, yes, we think there's potential here. And we laid out a plan. And just like you have a process of adoption, that's exactly what happened there in that work. You can also have a congregation that's of a different denomination and they've changed their convictions and they want to come. And then that's, in one sense, not church planting and taking a place where there was no church and seeing one develop, but it's still a way that the church grows. And again, it's almost like adopting an almost grown child at that point in time. Yeah. Yeah, we've certainly done that in the denomination as well. So those are two options, daughtering and adopting. A third one we might call hiving. What do you think hiving would be?
Well, so I obviously it rings up images of bees to me. And I guess when you split a hive, right, what you do is you find another queen bee, mm-hmm. and you remove that queen bee from the initial hive, and about half that hive then follows the new queen, and the other half stays and remains at the old. That I'm not familiar with hiving in terms of church planting, but if I were to guess, that is the direction I would go.
That's a great illustration. And that is how it goes.
Okay, hiving, okay, good.
Hiving is where a congregation grows sufficiently enough in size that basically it can send out a whole congregation and establish another site that already has significant numbers, already it takes some of the leadership from the original congregation and that becomes the new leadership. It could even, there could be even like a team of pastors, and that team of pastors, one goes to one location and the other stays there. And that's exactly what we saw at College Hill. For years and years, the church is in a historic building. It's landlocked. They've looked at ways to try to expand the size of the physical structure. They can't do it. So it means that the congregation can only grow to a certain size, and it had to do something. And all the other plans that they had fostered, moving the congregation, none of that really seemed to work out. And eventually what they decided to do when another denomination's building became available just a few blocks away. But in some ways, it was more than just a couple blocks away. It was a little bit more of some miles away in the sense of a different approach, whereas the mm-hmm. building on campus very much has a sense of strong student ministry, but certainly has a community impact. This congregation that got established across Route 18, they say, has... Mm-hmm. more of a sense of community ministry while still having some impact on the campus as well. And so it was arduous at times. The church had never done anything like this. There's a lot of loyalties built in a historic congregation such as College Hill. So it was very difficult, painful for people to be pressed to separate. And there were misunderstandings at times. Our session didn't always handle things properly at times. We had to seek the congregation's forgiveness. I remember on one occasion at a worship service just for struggling through leading in this. But eventually, in a very beautiful, peaceful way at the end, these two congregations have come about. And as I said, God is prospering. So usually when you hive, it's not necessarily just a few blocks away. but I think in a place where our denomination has a college and so many people after they graduate stay around in this area, for there to be a cluster of churches, Reformed Presbyterian churches, I think is just natural. And part of what in the midst of this I communicated was my experience at Indiana Wesleyan, because you go around Marion and there are a lot of Wesleyan churches. Well, I wonder why. Well, it's because the college is there. So it just makes sense that there would be, again, an organic, natural flowing out of people into new churches and areas such as that. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And the one thing, and I know we still have some different types of church planting to go through, but the one thing that I think that is present in each one of these is they, not unlike giving birth, there is pain involved and there is growth involved and there's sadness involved and there's, it's not easy. I mean, it would be easy to just lock yourself in your church building and be done, but that's not what God calls us to do. He calls us to go through these things. And so even, you know, you would think hiving would probably be one of the easier forms, but even that is going to be, going to have its own set of issues, a different set of issues than adoption, adopting or daughtering. But there's always these issues, and it's through these growth pains that churches are made stronger.
Yes, that's right. Something that's pretty close, but not quite the same as hiving, would be called cloning. And again, what imagery does that bring to mind?
Star Wars.
Yeah. That's right.
Or sheep. Star Wars or sheep. Dolly.
Yes.
No, it seems to me like the difference between cloning and hiving, I think, would be the role of, or the ministry of the church. So when you're cloning, it's very similar, I would think, that you're trying to set up and using several people from the same church to develop or start a new church. But the difference is the goal of the ministry, or the ministry itself, the philosophy of ministry would be the same in both congregations. So you may have the same oversight or the same vision, and not that you don't cooperate in hiving, but there's probably a little bit more cooperation and leaning on each other and shared goals and shared mission. Whereas in hiving, you're going to have different goals and different missions.
Right.
Is that decently accurate?
Oh yeah, very much so. And right. Particularly in colonizing, this is also where we get the idea of satellite congregations or multi-site churches, where often in these situations, they remain under the same leadership. So, and that can take different forms. So, and again, this would not be our experience in our circles, because we wouldn't see too much of this going on, where there would be two separate congregations meeting, but they would all stay under the same session for an extended time. I know that it has been done in a place or two, in one of our presbyteries, although it's no longer structured that way. They just wanted to give a good long time for the new site to develop under the session before it separated off. In other circles, they will actually have the goal to remain under the same organizational structure. And perhaps one of the most infamous cases of that right now would be at Mars Hill. There's this podcast going on, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, where they're explaining this, where Driscoll's goal was on all these satellite campuses to get up to 50,000 or more members. And of course, things like that begin to have their own problems, because I don't think that the Lord has structured the church for all of its authority and power to remain under just a few men. You really get into, a hierarchical system of government. Akin more to Catholicism than Presbyterianism. And so it's not healthy long-term. I think for a session to oversee several works for a period of time might be necessary temporarily, but I don't think that's really true Presbyterianism. You want to see, and that's the beauty of church planting, is that you see the multiplication, not only of people and congregations, but you see the multiplication of leadership. That's what you should always be striving for in the church.
Right.
Have we gotten that one?
I didn't hear. Yeah. I didn't hear any questions there. So I was just going to let you move on.
Okay.
You didn't examine on that
in order to finish on time here. So the fifth one would be called the parachute drop. What's that sound like?
Well, it. My father-in-law was a paratrooper in the Vietnam War, so I have images of, and the stories are just incredible. But I have images of individuals just being dropped in the middle of nowhere, the proverbial jungle, as it were, and just setting up camp there. So it's like, hey, we would love to see a church in Timbuktu. So we're going to send a couple guys, you go down there and do the work. So to me, that would be parachuting.
That's right. And oftentimes, just like you would in a battle, have a strategic purpose for doing so. Perhaps there's a city that a presbytery has developed a heart for to see work develop there. They don't really have families that are there, contacts that are there, but they have a desire to see someone go. Maybe some pastor or church planter gets a calling, a yearning to go to that particular site. And so they go and they start trying to develop ministry, doing a lot of evangelism and Bible study and discipleship and see God grow the church. And so that would be more the parachute drop. And I think we have, I think that's exactly what Paul and Barnabas did, and especially their first missionary journey. They were going where there was no one. They're preaching the gospel, staying in communities for a period of time. And by God's grace, they saw churches develop that way, and then went back through and established leadership and kept trying to nurture those churches often at a distance. So that would be the parachute drop. We've had a few of those in our circles. I think what you really have to do is identify men who are particularly gifted, because in many ways you're walking a tightrope without a net. You have to be very gifted and particularly just faithful, enduring. I think of missionaries that have done work like this, such as John G. Payton, who went to the islands there, the New Hebrides Islands. So it would take remarkable people usually to go and do this kind of work. But we have seen it. We have seen it done. And it can have more dangers, more casualties to it, just like in war, when men are out fighting by themselves rather than having their companions nearby. So you have to really think about the cost of it as you consider a parachute drop. Yeah. Well, we've got one more. And sometimes you don't mean to give birth. And so there's the accidental church plant. And you can imagine what that one is. That's really when usually there's sin involved and a church splits. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a plan to have another church, but perhaps personalities got involved and or people didn't like the way the pastor was leading, or the pastor didn't like the way he's being treated. And there's a split between the two and another church is established. Ever heard of that happening?
I would call that. I don't. Thankfully, that does not sound very familiar in our circles. Now, I have seen that in other denominations. But in our circles, I don't think I've seen, at least not in recent history. I'm sure in our past history, there may have been some of that. But recently, I can't think of any churches that has been the case, thankfully.
Well, one sense we come full circle, because I know the College Hill congregation was in some ways formed that way. And it created on the hill from a congregation that used to be there that's no longer existing. It created a lot of strife. And I've read a paper that Dr. Bob Copeland wrote about that. And at one point, that College Hill church voted not to have a man come and serve as their pastor. And then the presbytery voted to place him there anyway. And you can imagine how that went. So there, even in our circles, these things can happen, even if it's been a little bit more in the past history of things.
Right.
Well, Scott, if you're in my church planting class, I'd have to give you an A. Like you did. You did great. You not only explained them well, you gave our listeners great illustrations of them. So way to go. I just think that shows you've been living quite a bit of this in your own life and ministry.
It has been an active part of my Christian life, I think, since I really joined the RP church, for sure. It's church planting has been in our mind and in our heart and in our church's hearts and minds from day one. So it's a blessed thing to be a part of. It's a hard thing, sort of like sending your daughter off to get married sometimes, where you the father mourns a little bit that he's losing a daughter, but he's gaining a son-in-law. So, you know, there is joy in it, but there is sorrow in it as well. But it's worth it because in the end, it's not our church. It's not the pastor's church. It's not the elder's church. But it's Christ's church, and this is how he has called us to be, to take the gospel into all the world, into all the nations, baptizing them and teaching them.
So, that's right. And
it's been a blessing.
I just wanted to end with, I've been involved, I would say, quite a bit in church planting, but I don't really consider myself a great expert in it, just a proponent of it. And I was sitting in a class, or not sitting, but teaching a class a few years ago when one of my East Asian brothers was trying to explain to me what was going on in his context. And he ended up coming up to the board and drawing all these circles, talking about all these different groups in his city and how, you know, what to do. And I said, well, I think you need to be telling us what to do, because obviously God's blessing you all. You're seeing many churches develop. And at one point I was told that the churches there were multiplying in number and membership, a doubling every 5 years. And so God is certainly blessing church planting in different ways around the world. And I do think we should be praying for it and desiring as God wills to be involved in it as his people. Well, that's about all we have time for today. Thank you, Scott, for this discussion. And thank you, listeners, for joining in on it. If you'd like to write to us and tell us what's on your mind, give us ideas for future topics, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so by writing us at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. Don't forget that dot, 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. I don't know how many emails we've lost just because people forgot the dot. I don't know. But you can also go to our website at 3gt.xyz, where you can find out more about the podcast, listen to old episodes, or if you're so inclined, even support us. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Three Guys Theologizing.